You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, and I want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday, and this is the Thursday show, and I am John Corrales of the Rain and Jays here by myself, soloing the show as we get ready for the Bucks-Celtics Game 1 now officially on Sunday. I'm going to carry you through what happened on Wednesday. Not a very big day, so not a very big podcast, but I'm going to walk you through some of the things that happened through practice. Remember, if you are a new subscriber, if you're a new listener, go ahead and download that Himalaya podcast app so you can get curated feeds based on your preferences. You just answer a few simple questions, and they're going to get you all of the podcasts that you want to listen to, including the Locked On Celtics podcast. Of course, all of you regular listeners, please give us that 5-star rating and a good review. So, practice Wednesday was kind of an interesting day where we saw Marcus Smart on the elliptical, and we saw Marcus Smart get some shooting and Marcus Smart working up a sweat for the first time, really, in a long time. So, let's start with that. Marcus Smart worked up his sweat and was very happy. Had a conversation, or at least an interaction, with the Globe's Adam Himmelsbach, where he said it's about time that he can go out there and work up a sweat. So that's good for Marcus Smart. Glad that he's able to do that. He's jumping a little bit. I mentioned that in the other podcast. He's out there working, trying to do what he can to get back, stay in some kind of shape, keep that shooting touch. The jump shots, he's jumping just a little bit. He's doing some lateral movement. He's not twisting from what we can see, at least yet, not outwardly. So Marcus Smart working his way towards a comeback. I'm still not 100% sure that he's going to be back in this series, but we're going to hold out hope. In the meantime, we're watching to see if Malcolm Brogdon will be back. He is expected to be back at some point in the in this series. He is much closer to a return to the court than the than Marcus Smart is. So he suffered a mild plantar fascia tear in his right foot, which is very painful. It was expected to cost him up to 8 weeks, and he was in a walking boot to start, and the second round of the playoffs have always been a target. So somewhere this week, it's expected that we'll get word on Malcolm Brogdon. Now, if Malcolm Brogdon can play, that changes the series just a little bit because he's a big part of their offense. And if Brogdon's out there, then it just kind of adds one more guy that can go out there and score points. He shot very well during the regular season. He was 10th in the league in three-point shooting. He shot over 50% from the floor. He averaged just about 16 points a game, also three assists. And it's just one more guy that you have to worry about defensively. When Giannis is driving, and kicking, to have that one guy that can just spot up like he can and shoot over 40% from three, that's a guy that you can't leave. And I'll talk a little bit about, because I have a piece out on MassLive.com that details the Celtics' defensive strategy, well, as best I can, of Giannis Antetokounmpo. So Malcolm Brogdon being back changes that a bit. And if he can be back at any point in the series, then the loss of Marcus Smart really hurts because it takes away a guy who can switch And whether he switches on to Giannis or switches on to Brogdon, that's going to be an issue for the Celtics. So we know that Smart is probably not going to be back, at least until the end of this series, if it goes long enough. Brogdon may be back, and we'll have to see if he's back early or if it's going to take him to later in the series. So those are your injury updates. Kyrie Irving spoke, Brad Stevens spoke, and Jason Tatum spoke. Jason Tatum didn't say anything particularly interesting. Brad Stevens talked about going to the Bruins game. The Celtics went to the Bruins game. I really always love the Celtics and other teams kind of supporting each other. The other night, the Celtics in game two, I think it was game two of the series, in the first round series against the Indiana Pacers, that the Celtics in arena staff showed the New England Patriots twice. I remember talking about that after the podcast. When the Celtics were down 12 going into the fourth quarter, the Celtics in arena production crew showed the Patriots again. They showed Bill Belichick again and all of those guys. Fans really just love seeing these other players and other coaches from other teams. And on the Jumbotron during the Bruins Maple Leafs game 7, there were the Boston Celtics. Front and center, Jaylen Brown in the Boston Bruins jersey, who was really animated. That was awesome. But also joined by many other Boston Celtics, including Brad Stevens, who was there waving the towel, kind of enjoying himself. It looked like he was actually smiling, which was nice. And he talked about how much fun it was to be a fan. And like I said, it's always amazing to watch these teams kind of support each other. Mookie Betts is at Celtics games. A lot of Patriots are at Celtics games. I might not recognize any of the Bruins, to be honest with you. I do like hockey. I just can't follow the Bruins anymore because I'm so invested in basketball and the NBA that I just can barely tear myself away to know who anybody besides, you know, Brad Marchand is, you know, a couple other guys. Zdeno Chara I can recognize. You know, there's like seriously like maybe four or five guys that I can recognize. So, but these guys all support each other. Boston Celtics will be at Red Sox games. They'll be at these Bruins games. They'll be at Patriots games. They all really just enjoy supporting one another. So that was a fun little moment that we heard from Brad Stevens talking about that. And the funniest part was where he talked about any ideas from the Bruins, like some just one of those silly questions. And he says, yeah, cross-checking and all that stuff looked fun, but I don't think we could get away with it. So a fun little moment from them there. Okay, I do have a piece. By the time you're listening to this, I'm assuming it's going to be out because I'm recording this very, very early in the morning, and the piece publishes at 6 a.m. on Mass Live. It's just a little conversation I had with Marcus Morris and Semi Ojeleye about defending Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm going to come back after the break. I'm going to talk about that. So we go into these practices where we are just hoping to get different stories, different angles, maybe something original. And one of the thoughts I had was trying to talk to Marcus Morris and Semi Ojeleye about what it's like to guard Giannis Antetokounmpo. I wanted to try to get a little sense of what it's like. Now, it didn't go exactly the way I thought it would or hoped it would. I was really, and this isn't the time for me to get this type of comment or whatever from them. But I was really hoping for a little bit more in-depth, like, oh, yeah, this is he does this and he does that and he's great at this and it's very difficult to stop that. They're not going to say that going into a series. Marcus Morris was very defiant, as he should be. He's like, I'm going to step up to the challenge. I'm going to do what I need to do, all of that stuff. And he's preparing himself to guard Giannis Antetokounmpo. And he's certainly not going to show any signs of weakness. He's not going to show any sign of trying to look like he's not ready for the challenge. So fine. So, but he did have he did say that you have to load up on him in the especially in transition. It's not going to be just one guy. And you, the best part was that he talked about the hard fouls, that you're going to have to hard foul him, and you're going to have to make sure that he feels you. So when we see the Celtics guarding Giannis Antetokounmpo, you have to watch for a lot of help. And how's that help going to impact other players? Like I said before, Malcolm Brogdon, if he gets in there and he's going to be a threat from three, then who knows how that's going to impact the series, but it's not going to be great for the Boston Celtics probably. But Giannis driving, Giannis getting to the paint, that's the one common theme that everybody talked about in practice was Giannis getting to the paint. He's elite in getting into the paint. It's hard to stop him. It's impossible to stop him from getting into the paint. So what do you do as the Celtics? You help and you send more than one guy. But to send more than one guy, you have to help off of somebody. And Giannis has this season his best assist percentage of his career. So he's passing the ball well, and he's hitting other players, and they're shooting well from three. And it's everybody, Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, all those guys, Ilyasova when he gets in, Connaughton when he gets in. I mean, those guys are all going to be, whomever takes the floor, they're all going to be threats. And you pack the paint and you challenge Giannis to pass, he's going to pass, and guys are going to get the ball and they're going to get open shots. So, but still, you have to load up and try to make it so he doesn't get to the rim and doesn't get those dunks. One thing Semi Ojeleye talked about was once he does get into within a couple of feet and it's going to be a guaranteed dunk, you foul. You got to foul him. And Mook also talked about you have to foul. So he's going to have a parade at the line. And like I've mentioned before in podcasts, you start to mention who's going to be starting for the Celtics in this series and why I don't think Gordon Hayward is going to be starting in this series is because two reasons. For one, what I just talked about. If Giannis is going to drive to the rim, if Giannis is going to get fouled, and if fouling is part of the defensive strategy, you can't have Gordon Hayward in there potentially getting two fouls early in the first quarter and nullifying him later in the game. You just can't. He has to be an important option down the stretch. So you burn fouls through Semi Ojeleye. Like Ojeleye and Morris are two guys that you can kind of throw to the wolves and ask them to defend. And if you go down the stretch without either of those two, the Celtics will be fine. The Celtics can throw the original starting lineup down with Kyrie and Hayward and Horford and Tatum and Brown. Like that's going to be your closing lineup anyway. You don't want to sacrifice much of that potential closing lineup by having those guys having to spend a lot of time on Giannis. Obviously, Horford's going to get a pass at him, but you just, Hayward especially, you don't want to burn that. So this is why Morris and Ojeleye are going to be super important, I think, in this series. I know I was advocating for Ojeleye starting in the Pacers series, but this is for real. Like, I think he has to play in this series, and he has to be willing to use his six fouls as a potential kind of defensive strategy. Giannis is averaging like 13 free throws a game. If Ojeleye is going to be out there, burn your fouls. Get those six fouls in there and be physical and use that body to wear him down. So the other reason why, to finish off the thought, that you don't start Gordon Hayward is because the Celtics are going to need a second ball handler. And I think Gordon Hayward off the bench is very important to the rotations and the strategy where you have two ball handlers on the floor at the same time at all times. You start Kyrie, you're not going to have two with Kyrie to start, but Tatum can do some and Brown can do some and Horford can do some, but you bring Rozier in, then you bring Hayward in and you just have that rotation. So I think Hayward's out as a starter. I just think he's much, much, much more important off the bench and as a closer. So back to the defensive strategy against Giannis, why Ojeleye, why Morris are so important. You wear that guy down. Those fouls just take a toll on you. When you're getting the crap kicked out of you over and over and over again, that is going to wear you down. And for the Celtics, it's all about bend, don't break. And sure, Giannis might finish games with 30 points and 8 rebounds and 6 assists, but if you can survive those numbers through the first 3 quarters, and then in the 4th quarter, Giannis is so beat up and worn down by all of the physicality from Morris, from Ogilvy, and from whomever else, some Baines out there. Baines is going to be out there getting some reps off the bench. Some Horford, all of that physicality. You hope that it comes together for a late fourth quarter kind of tiring effect where he's just not driving as effectively as he was, that he's settling for jumpers a little bit more often. And that's where you make your move, that the Celtics' depth and strength and ability to foul is going to wear Giannis down to a point where late in the game, he's not going to be the closer that he can be. That's the effort that you're hoping from the Boston Celtics. That's the best thing you can hope for defensively, because he is impossible to stop. You're not stopping Giannis defensively. You're just hoping to contain him to a certain degree. Okay, taking a break, coming right back with more on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Haven't gotten a chance to answer some tweets, so just looking through some of the Rain of Jays hashtag, there are questions about the predictions, essentially, that from ZKH Boston, who says, "I don't understand the expert consensus that the Bucks will win the series. I totally get that the Bucks are better this year. I get Giannis as MVP and Bud as a great coach, but last year happened, and now we have Kyrie and Hayward." Thoughts? Okay, here are some thoughts. I think that both teams are different. And it was kind of funny. Eric Name from the Locked On Bucks podcast, and he writes for The Athletic in Milwaukee, had a great tweet. Basically, it's the two fan bases, he said, screaming at each other, "But you don't understand how much better we are than last year." And that's true. The Bucks are better this year. Giannis is better this year. He's career high true shooting percentage, a career high player efficiency rating, career high rebounding rate, career high assist rate. Like, he's playing better basketball than he ever has, and he's been awesome for so long that this is even better. So the Bucks are better. Bud is a great coach. His strategy, though, I am very curious about, and this is where the Celtics can really, like, I don't know that there's, maybe the consensus is that the Bucks are going to win. Maybe. I don't think that this is going to be a lopsided series. I think whatever happens, if the Bucks win, they're going to have to really, really earn these wins. Because what the Celtics have that they didn't have last year, obviously Kyrie and Hayward, okay? We'll start with that. Kyrie is going to get past whatever line of defense on the perimeter that the Bucks throw at Boston. And we didn't see a ton. We saw some of it. I wrote about it, the Kyrie-Horford combination. I think in the first round, Brad Stevens played a lot of things close to the vest. I don't think he uncorked some of the things that he can uncork. And I think some of what he's been waiting to do in the playoffs can start to be unleashed here in the second round. Like, he is going to have to throw a lot more Kyrie and Al pick and roll out there, because that's what takes advantage of these matchups. Al Horford as the pick and pop guy to neutralize Brook Lopez is going to be super, super important. And last year they were running that with Al and Terry Rozier. This time they're running it with Kyrie Irving or Gordon Hayward. Like, that's just a different animal. So that will be a wrinkle that the Bucks haven't seen. The Bucks, they play the pick and roll. They sag the big. So let me just paint the picture here. Kyrie and Al Horford will run a pick and roll against Eric Bledsoe and Robin Lopez. I mean, Brooke Lopez. Or Robin Lopez if he wants to show up. Whichever. So, Al Horford goes and picks Eric Bledsoe, and Kyrie Irving goes over the pick. Uses the pick. So what'll happen is Lopez will drop way down, which means he steps backwards, he drops into the paint, and what he's doing, and what happens is Eric Bledsoe will go over the top of the pick. So he's basically following Kyrie over the top of the pick. And what they're hoping for is usually the guy setting the pick isn't Al Horford. The guy setting the pick is usually a not great shooter because those guys don't tend to shoot great who are setting those picks up there. And they're daring that guy to shoot. So number one, step one, Al Horford's not the guy that they normally defend in those situations. So Al Horford can hit those shots. So if they pack the paint and Kyrie wants to drive and draw Eric Bledsoe, yes, in and keep drawing him in further and further into the paint and turn and flip a pass out to Al Horford, then go for it because Al Horford can hit that shot a lot. Okay, fine. Next, Kyrie comes over the top and he knows that Eric Bledsoe is trailing him. So what he does is he stops, rises up, draws the foul from Bledsoe. You're probably going to see that a couple of times in this series in game one where he just stops and uses that aggressiveness of Bledsoe against him, rises up, draws the foul. A great way to draw some shooting fouls, get some easy points at the free throw line, put the other team in the penalty. So that alone, Kyrie, Al Horford, that dynamic is going to be a test for them defensively. So what does Milwaukee do to counter? Do they not start Brooke Lopez? Okay, fine. So they start Giannis, and you're going to run the pick and roll against Giannis? Fine. You want to draw Giannis away from the rim? By all means, please draw Giannis away from the rim because now that's another rim protector away. So the Celtics do have matchups that they can turn to in those situations. The Milwaukee Bucks invite a lot of these three-pointers. They do not invite a lot of shots at the rim. The Celtics don't like to take shots at the rim. They don't like to do some of those things that draw free throws. They love to take threes. Who's going to take those threes? Who's going to make those threes? It's going to be Gordon Hayward, who is shooting them much better. It's going to be Marcus Morris, who I'm just going to wing in a prayer. Hopefully he's found some of his game one against Indiana magic and early season magic. And you got to hope that Jaylen Brown is hitting, that Jason Tatum is hitting. If those guys can be hitting those threes, then you got a real, real problem on your hand if you're the Milwaukee Bucks. And making shots, the Celtics have to make sure that they're making shots. And I say that knowing how it sounds. Like, of course, obviously you want to make sure you're making shots. If that was so easy, you'd go out and make 100% of the shots. But here's, when I say that, I mean that they have to take good shots. They have to take the shots that they can normally make. They don't have to force things. They don't have to be inefficient. But why it's so important to be making shots, it's you don't want the Milwaukee Bucks in transition. You got to do everything you can to limit the Milwaukee Bucks in transition. And if the Celtics can hit shots and force the Bucks to pull that ball out of the net, go out of bounds, inbound the ball, then the defense is back and set. So they are going to, if they can take those shots and be efficient in making those shots, that's going to be a huge thing. So the make or miss league thing is going to be a big deal. The Celtics are not going to be crashing the offensive boards. They can't crash the offensive boards. It's going to be either one and done or that's going to be a make. You can't be crashing the boards, I don't think, because what's going to happen, unless you're like, Aaron Baines will crash the boards because he's already going to be down there and he might as well. But there has to be a strong, strong emphasis in getting back and building a wall and not letting Giannis kind of just drive to the rim without any sort of resistance. So there are things the Celtics can do and there are things that make both teams better. And there are matchups on both sides that the Milwaukee Bucks and the Boston Celtics will try to exploit with one another. We'll get into more of that. I'm going to try to set up one of these crossover podcasts with Locked On Bucks, and hopefully we can get a little bit more from them, from their side. So we'll have to see. As far as the notion and at Boston Sports with a Z at the end, who says, I keep seeing Celtics are doomed because the best player they faced was Bogdanovich. The best player the Bucks faced was one-legged Blake Griffin. That is true. There are a lot of people who say, oh, the Celtics, they struggled to sweep the Indiana Pacers with Bogdanovich as their best player. Yeah, and the Milwaukee Bucks, they swept the Pistons pretty easily. Well, that was the eighth seed playing without their best player, and you're the one seed. I would like to think it was a little bit easier. So it's just a different dynamic. It's just different. I don't even want to go down this road too much because there's a lot of, well, you did this, and they did that, and if this, then that. And it's not if-then scenarios here. The Celtics, how they beat the Indiana Pacers has no bearing, like almost no bearing at all on this series, because it's a different team. It's a different matchup. It's just different. And we make the mistake of, well, this happened in the prior round, so then this is going to carry over to the next round. I mean, unless it's something like Gordon Hayward is a little bit different because he's progressing from an injury and he's starting to come back. And guys who are progressing and doing things, there might be some carryover, but it's so matchup based that, and people who are talking this kind of smack don't understand how good a defensive team the Pacers were and how hard they worked to defend against the Boston Celtics. And if the Indiana Pacers faced the Milwaukee Bucks, it would have been more of a challenge for them because defensively they're really, really good. It probably would have still been a sweep, but you know what? Would have been a much more difficult sweep for the Indiana Pacers. And if the Celtics played the Pistons in the first round, I bet you it would have been a little bit easier. And then maybe Boston fans would have turned around and said, hey, you had a hard time sweeping the Pacers. But that was a horrible Boston Celtics fan voice, by the way. But you have to pay attention to situation and understanding what's going on. And this is just different. So I think the Celtics are in a good position. They are a team that is uniquely built to match up well against the Milwaukee Bucks. The Milwaukee Bucks are a really good team. They won 60 games. That's a great team. And the Celtics were a team that we expected to win 60 games. And if they can get to playing that level of basketball, then this is going to be a great series. And it might just come down to how well can the Celtics defend Giannis, and can they make sure that he's not killing them down the stretch. If they can survive early Giannis and make it so he's not dominant fourth quarter Giannis, then great. If not, then congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks. That's how it's going to go. Okay, guys, I'm going to wrap up the podcast because I've been talking for about 30 minutes and I want to stop talking and go to sleep. So that's going to be your podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed it enough, if you're a new listener, to subscribe to the Locked On podcast, Locked On Celtics podcast, on the new Himalaya podcast app. Go ahead and do that. Subscribe wherever podcasts are available, or go in your car and ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Celtics. Regular listeners, that 5-star rating, that good written review would be awesome. And share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packet, and J. King.